What's up? This is MC Lars. You are listening to Journey into Comics.
You!
And here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, a podcast about comic books, video games, movies, television, and everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
You're gonna see some serious shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Journey into Comics. I'm your host, Nate. As always, joining me, my co-host, Brando. How you doing?
I'm going pretty good. How are you?
Doing really awesome. We are here live from the LafayCon floor. And today we've kind of got a special episode for everybody. And you're going to get a couple of these throughout the coming weeks, I think. We had a really great set of panels from LafayCon. And what we're going to do now is we're going to first bring on the panel with Brian Morris. Wes and Brando did this panel. Now, you guys did the panel. He seemed like he was just having a blast up there.
Oh, dude. He's like almost like a natural entertainer. You know, he's very much into freelancing, you know, comics. And he even runs his own publishing thing, that, you know, like that, like he talks about during the actual panel. And you know what? Going from, like, we did this right after our live show. So me and Wes pretty much stayed up there and we got this show going with him. And it was so easy. Like, at first I was a little nervous because I'm like, I don't really know this guy too much on a personal level. We had met him at VillainsCon.
Yeah, we met him, and it's funny because the episode title today, I think, is something to do with the Mortician Magician or something, because he's got a pretty funny story that you guys will hear. But we'll cut to that here in a second, Brando. Again, it was awesome to do LafayCon with you 2017, and I'm really, really hoping we get to do 2018 as well.
Oh, I'm really hoping to as well. And then after, we're going to get to it right after you guys get hear Brian talk. We're going to come back and tell you a little bit more. But after that, we have another panel with Fiberglass Freaks, and they make like the 1960s era Batman Batmobile, you know. And so we're going to listen to them talk as well. We'll be back to introduce that, let you a little bit know more about that. But stick here, is right up here next is our panel with Brian Morris.
All right, we ready to go?
10-4, good buddy.
Woo. All right, good mic check. Ladies and gentlemen of LafayCon, this is our first panel of the day. The one and only Brian Morris.
Yay.
And of course, you are a freelance writer, novelist, editor, independent publisher, comic scripter, former mortician's assistant.
Former mortician, yes. For a year, I worked for a cemetery in the Champaign, Illinois area.
Really?
Yeah, my boss was a full-fledged mortician. And of course, you know, he would be the last guy. He was trustworthy. He was the last guy that would ever let you down. And and the funny thing was, and this is also the truth, he was also a professional magician.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of tricks he tried to pull on you while you were there.
I never slept. I never took a nap around the guy. You know, and I have no idea what happened with any of the bodies after we interred them. So, you know, but no, I did that for a year, and it was absolutely fascinating. And it's funny that as a writer, I do a lot of research on the subjects that I am, you know, writing about. And that's why it annoys the living poop out of me to see a TV show or a movie where you see the guy coming up after the big dramatic scene. You know, it's like, oh, we missed the guy. Oh, and they throw the dirt on the casket. And then the guy starts shoveling dirt on top of it. And that drives me up the wall because I'm sitting there going, no, he's got to be in a vault, either polyvinyl chloride or concrete. And, you know, he's got to lay it down. And then they can put the dirt on it because it's only for, you know, keeping the grounds nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with preservation of the body. That's your grim fact of the day.
Oh, that is awesome.
So mortician's assistant's got to look the best on your resume.
It does. Yeah. My resume, my professional resume, like if I was looking for a real job,
yeah.
It just shows you all the careers I've had in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But, you could interpret it as I have a wide base of knowledge mm-hmm. to make business decisions, or I can't keep a job in a field for nothing. So...
So you go from being a mortician's assistant
yes.
to working in the comic industry.
Yes.
And so was that something that you were working towards while you were like doing the mortician's assistant job, or was it, did that come later?
Yeah, well, yes to both, actually, because back in the 80s and 90s, I did some small press comics work, and it was around that time, slightly after those, that I was doing, you know, the mortician thing. And then I settled into some regular 9-to-5 work. But what really kicked it off was the fact that I got fired from my last job.
Oh.
Well, I worked at the water company in a municipality near you guys, about 31 miles to the west on I-74. Won't tell you the name. and they had a thing where the stock wasn't performing properly. Yeah. So they had to let the last guy hired. And even at 11 years, I was the last guy hired there.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, I had already started my freelancing career because I was contributing to magazines and, you know, I was writing plays and such. So they couldn't understand why I went through all six stages of grieving in about 45 seconds. You know, I got my plan B, brother. Just let me out of here, okay? Right. So I used the severance pay to teach myself how to publish. Yeah, because they set me up with a re-employment agency. And, of course, you go through the webinars, you know, would you like to, you know, juggle bombs for a living? Would you like to, you know, sweep streets for a living? And then they had a thing on, you know, electronic publishing. And I'm like, what the heck? That's in my line. So I went through the webinar. It was a one-hour webinar. And at the end of it, I felt like I'd been in a tent revival. Because all I could see was the potential for publishing in this. And so I took my severance and started investing it in further training and my supplies and everything. And through parlaying of credits, et cetera, you know, that's, you know, where I am now. So, and we're doing okay.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it worked out for the best.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm really, and it led to comic work.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and in fact, I'm editor-in-chief of a small company out in Oak Park, Illinois.
Yeah.
Very nice.
And what's that called?
It is Silver Phoenix Entertainment, silverphoenix.net.
ding.
Ding. In fact, we just did a Kickstarter campaign that ended last night, and we got 110% of our goal.
That is awesome.
Thank you. And it's work.
Yes.
It's serious work, but we're tickled with the titles we have coming out. We have two of them in particular right now. The one we had the Kickstarter for was The Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove, which is based on a real-life haunted cemetery in Midlothian, Illinois, in the southwest suburbs of Chicago. I've been there. I am not prone to fearing the supernatural. I tell people I don't disbelieve. This scared the crap out of me. There, it is just spooky as all get out. It's a cemetery that was it was founded about the time of the Civil War, but it had fallen into disrepair as the traffic patterns were changed in that area by the cities, and it hasn't had an interment there, a burial, since 1989.
Wow.
And they have a pond there. It's kind of a retention pond on the edge of it that the mob used to drop bodies in there.
So, Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah,
we found him.
I want to learn how to scuba just so I can go in there and look. But there are stories of ghostly Madonnas and a farmhouse that, as you approach it, it recedes away from you.
Huh.
And we're taking some of these legends and we are writing stories around them too.
That is cool.
That's a great idea for a book. So
it is, and it's blossomed from like a single issue to now we've got plans for about 16 issues.
Wow,
that's a lot expanded from what you were originally planning, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we got a lot of people that wanted to get on board. We've had people that have no experience, but you know, show talent. We want to give them a chance. Yeah. Plus, we're getting some attention from people that. Are seasoned professionals in the comic book field.
Yeah.
One gentleman that's working with us is Steve Geiger, who was the former assistant to John Romita Sr. in the Marvel bullpen. So he was like an art director for Marvel for a long, long time. So he wants to work with us. We've got several other professionals that we're trying to, you know, come to agreements with. So yeah, it's been a fun time.
That's awesome because it's always really neat. I'm really attracted to like independent publishers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a grassroots type of thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, it offers like paranormal story was about it's centered around started off in that one mm-hmm. cemetery in Illinois.
Yeah,
and that's such an isolated mm-hmm. thing. And see, you can just do so much of that because how many people from other parts of this country are completely unfamiliar with that.
Exactly.
So then they're learning about these legends through these stories. Mm-hmm. That's really cool and really fascinating.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also one of those things that the independent publisher can do a lot of things that the big publishers can't.
Yeah.
Very
as far as subject matter and even just getting an issue out with as little drama as possible. So,
right.
You know, I agree with you. That's why I support the industry, not just, you know, with my dollars, but by working mm-hmm. it as well. So.
Okay, so I love how your bio said a recent escapee from Illinois.
Yes, I crawled under the wire. I lived in Illinois all but 15 months of my life before I came over here to Lafayette. In fact, my mm-hmm. wife got a job over here. Otherwise, I'd still be in Champaign yeah. apologizing for our state politicians. You know, I mean, Indiana's got a couple here too, but I was telling somebody earlier, as far as, you know, like openly crooked politicians, Indiana can't compare to Illinois.
No.
You know, it's like we've got to have a special investigation to find them in Indiana, but Illinois, they're like taking out front page, you know, ads on, you know, in the major newspapers going, hi, we're crooked, you know, so, you know, so it's been a very brief period of adjustment, and you know, I'll always be proud of, you know, living in Illinois, but mm-hmm. you know, I just seriously love Lafayette. I'm just
it's
having
a good
time of my life here. So
I moved here about 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
and I lived in Illinois all my life as well.
Yeah,
so that was really cool to I was sort of like reading your bio and mm-hmm. I'm like, he escaped too.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Because and honestly, I think for me it was just something like you don't even notice until you leave. Too much. I mean, yeah, you can be aware of it, but then it's like you leave and you go, wow, we're much better off here.
Yes, much. Kudos to Indiana. You guys rock. Seriously.
Now, okay, I saw something here that had my interest. You said your work has been seen in Back Issue Magazine and Hogan's Alley.
Hogan's Alley, yes.
Now, what Hogan's Alley are we talking about?
We are talking about a magazine that's published infrequently, but it specializes in newspaper strips and odd articles about comic books, any sort of sequential art. And I have done a couple of articles. The one I'm happiest with is I interviewed Stephen DeStefano, who worked in comic books, you know, very briefly. He did a wonderful series at DC called Amazing Man, which is one of my favorite titles ever. He's currently an animator. He's worked with the guys that do like Ren and Stimpy. And Samurai Jack, you know, those studios. He did a wonderful Plastic Man a few years ago that never, you know, never got sold, never went to series. But he is also, Stephen is also the chief licensing artist for Popeye.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah, and I had done an interview with him for Back Issue on Amazing Man, and he just kind of dropped it, you know. Oh yeah, what are you doing these days, Stephen? Well, I'm the chief, graphics representative for King Features on Popeye, and I'm like, huh? You know, I was like, we're going to talk again, Stephen. We're going to talk again because I also, in addition to going to Metropolis, Illinois, every year for the Superman celebration, Chester, Illinois, on the other side of the state, southern part of the state, is where Elsie Seeger, who created Popeye, grew up.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, and the theater where he used to work is the home of the International Popeye Fan Club and a Popeye Museum. And in fact, many of the people, if you go check out Chester, Illinois, many of the people who lived there at the time that Elsie Seeger did made their way into the comic book, or into the comic strip, rather, Thimble Theater.
Wow.
Like, Olive Oil is based on a local businesswoman. Wimpy is the manager at the theater he worked at. And there was a man named Rocky Flegel, who, you know, kind of squinted when he looked at people. And he used to lift barrels of beer onto his shoulder and walk them across town. It was said that Seeger, when Popeye really caught fire, would come back to Chester and just hand Flegel a check. And Flegel would be, what's this for? He goes, like, Don't ask. Just cash it, okay? You know, and thank you.
Totally under the table.
Exactly. You know, just a little thank you for being you. So.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that you had a plan B earlier about getting into freelancing. Do you have any tips for anybody wanting to get into freelancing, to start getting into the comic industry? Because, I mean, you said that you had been working, you've been going through everything, so, like, how exactly would, the regular Joe Schmo out here...
I just want to confirm, step one isn't get fired, is it?
I don't recommend that for everyone. It's like when I used to work at one store in Champaign, and I had a history of, like, cussing out the management. And I keep getting fired. I don't know why. I would cuss out the management in front of other customers. But the fact that I was right was the only thing that saved me. And I should have been fired, and I was prepared to walk. But I would say the first thing to do if you want a career, whether it's writing or drawing, first thing you do, start writing and drawing. Because the thing I talk to, I do a lot of mentoring because I got so many favors moving up the ladder that I'm paying it forward. A lot of us do that because the people, they had the same situation, so they're paying it forward to me. So the first thing to do is write or draw. Do it as much as possible. Do it every day. You are bound to get better at it. And then at the same time, if you're a writer, read. If you're an artist, look at other artists because you pick up things from other people. I'm not saying copy them. I'm just saying see how they do whatever they do, and then think about why it works. And then the thing is, and this is going to sound very simplistic, but just throw your work out there.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I would say it's probably easier than it's ever been in the entire history of comics or writing or wherever to simply put your work out there. You've got the World Wide Web. As far as printing, you've got places like CreateSpace, Kindle Direct Publishing, Kindle Worlds, which is something we can talk about because it's kind of paid fan fiction. Why, yes, it is. Well, it was part of my marketing plan. That's another thing. If you figure out your plans, figure out where you want to be 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years from now, and create benchmarks, goals, that once you achieve them, and deadlines, so that you know you're making progress. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to blow a deadline because you can always reset it. Don't be afraid to fall on your face because that's how you learn stuff. But anyway, Kindle Direct Publishing, when I started... Being the mercenary I am, this was part of my marketing plan. I wanted to tap into something that had a fandom already in place so that I could start making my name.
Yeah.
Well, Kindle Direct Worlds is a division of Amazon.com, who has the largest collection of credit card numbers in the world. Thus, it's real easy for somebody to buy your book on a whim. The thing is, I learned about this program through the fan press where basically Amazon was licensing various, call them intellectual properties, which at the time they had 15. Now they have closer to 75. But it was things at the time like the TV shows Pretty Little Liars, The Vampire Diaries. Okay. I think Gilmore Girls was one of them, too. That's kind of fun. And one of them was the Valiant comic book line.
Oh,
and
really?
The entire
Bloodshot
line.
And everything?
Yeah, Bloodshot. Wow. That was my first book. The Coldest Warrior. Available now on Amazon, www.amazon.com/author/Brian K. Morris. Thank you. And always learn to promote. Anyway, I wrote a Bloodshot book and put it up, and immediately it went to number 2 for the hot picks that month, and it's usually in the top 100 action-adventure Kindle Worlds books.
Wow.
But it's basically fan fiction. But I would say the approach I took was write it like a real novel.
Yeah.
So that, if somebody picks up your book and they're not familiar with the property, that's what backstory's for.
Yeah.
Fill them in on it. Make them a fan. And so I wrote this book, and then I used the contacts I made with that, you know, the people who bought my book and told them, hey, I've got this other book, Santa Stein. You know, Dr. Frankenstein has a cure for his fiance's holiday blues. What could possibly go wrong? For, you know, for about 15, 20 bucks, you can find out from me. So, and that's where, you know, we parlay the credits and all. But anyway, now they're up to about 75, and they also include things like G.I. Joe.
Oh.
So, yeah, classic Joe.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other genres even. There's romance, there's espionage, there's adventure, there's supernatural. It's, you know, go do a Kindle search for Kindle Direct or Kindle Worlds. Kindle Worlds. And you get the information on it. And if you follow, like, certain guidelines, you can upload your book when it's ready. You can preview it to make sure it reads well. Because, you know, the ease of reading is very important.
Yes. Of course.
And they can even, in most cases, supply you with artwork. And a, wow. You know, and, unless you have your own. And you get, like, the layout, and you just plug in your title, your name, and you're off to the races.
That's cool, because when you think about modern, like, well, just comic books in general, mm-hmm. you a lot of these characters have been around for 60, 70 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And you get somebody that comes on board to write for them or write a story, a lot mm-hmm. of times that is in itself fan fiction.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So especially like in the last, 40 years, you know, the mm-hmm. generation that came in the late 60s mm-hmm. were the people that read comics in the 40s and 50s, yeah. and now they get to follow their dream, and they in turn inspire others to, you know, get into the industry and amplify on what they have created. So
it's something that starts as like just an idea that you had about. Just take, for example, like any Batman book mm-hmm. in the 80s that eventually turned into canon for the character and
exactly.
villains like Bane or left and right. You could just
these little
one-shot stuff.
Fan books basically turned into major things.
Official fan fiction.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
Really neat and really interesting. I had no idea that something like that existed.
Me neither.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm here.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Now, you've recently released a new novel.
Yes.
Your fifth.
My fifth book, yes, because I'm a fast typist. Thank you, Mr. Smith, Georgetown High School. but yeah, it's a book I'm licensing from Ace Comics. The original Skyman battles the Master of Steam. We call it Steam Pulp.
Steam Pulp.
Steam Pulp. I like it. And it's he was a 1940s Playboy scientist adventurer. You know, so few of those were around then.
Very few.
Yeah, but he's a patriotic hero. He's America's national hero, and we tell his origin. To give you an idea of the pedigree this character has, his editor was the guy who's the editor on the very first Superman and Batman adventures, Vince Sullivan.
Really?
And he went on to form his own company, Columbia, and then another one called Magazine Enterprises, which had the original Ghost Rider. Even predating Marvel.
Oh, yeah, riding the horse.
That's the one.
Yep,
I know it. And then the original writer was Gardner Fox, who wrote the origin of Batman back in the 30s. He wrote the Justice Society, Justice League, Adam Strange, The Flash, Hawkman, a slew of great stories. And the original artist was a guy named Ogden Whitney, who isn't as famous as the other two, perhaps, mm-hmm. but he worked on, like, Thunder Agents in the 60s. He did, let's see, what else? He drew Two-Gun Kid for a while for Marvel, did a couple things of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he did Herbie the Fat Fury, which was a short-lived book about this overweight nobody who looks like, you know, he couldn't summon up enough brain power to light a match. But women were mad for, you know, his parents saw he was this big loser. And then, but you get him away from his parents, it's like women fall over him, you know, fall over him. People are scared of him. Bad guys are frightened of him. And he gets powers from eating different lollipops. It's a wacky title.
This sounds like so much fun.
So, yeah. Wow. But yeah, that's my latest book. It's an action adventure book, kind of a Indiana Jones Rocketeer kind of book. So, you know, Agent Carter kind of thing.
And that is available back at your booth?
Yes, it is. Thank you for mentioning that. Also on Amazon.com. You're the man. but, you know, I will autograph anything at my table.
Oh, neat.
In fact, I will not autograph it for an extra 20.
Oh, that's a bargain.
It is. I will give bulk rates for entire libraries.
Right on. So You know, I'm not sure how much left we have here. Are there any other questions?
Yes, grill me, interrogate me.
For this amazing gentleman. Nobody.
Oh, yes, we got sir. One. Yes, sir.
Do any ideas Ooh. Come out of dreams that you have?
That's a very good question. I actually have to say no, because I guess this shows how much I wanted to be a writer early on in my life. I started realizing my dreams had no real narrative flow to them. They were just like isolated instances. And the last dream I can remember in its entirety, I was in second grade and involved mummies and having to play dead, and none of the grown-ups believed me, which sounds like a good story at the, you know, the onset, but just it was so choppy. It was hard for me to follow my own dream. And just about the time the zombie was trying to see if, or the mummy rather, was trying to see if I was alive by sticking his index finger in my mouth and see if I flinched, I woke up and I thought, okay, no more, never again. So I actually don't remember most of my dreams now. But the thing is, I have, I guess, trained my subconscious that I look at, say, a news story, and then I start playing what if. Like, what if my hero was involved in something like that? Or take the situation, and what kind of hero would be perfect to solve that problem? And then what would impede that hero from being able to do it easily? You know, so that way you have your advantages, you have the character disadvantages, you know, like Indiana Jones, he's looking for the Ark of the Covenant. He's got all this archaeological knowledge, but he's terrified of snakes, and there's like snakes all over in the big clue that's going to tell him where this thing is. So, you know, all I think all of your best characters will have something that holds them back. And part of the, for me at least, the fun of a story is watching that character struggle to overcome them. So, and that's almost, to me, almost more important than the main plot. So,
All right. I have a question. I'm going to come out of the shadows for this one.
I'm braced and prepared.
Okay. Well, we are Journey into Comics, and I have to know,
yes,
as a younger gentleman growing up, where did your journey begin? Where did you, like, what was the first book you read? What got you into being a comic book fan? It says here,
that's good,
and I quote, no children, no pets, and too many comic books.
That is so true.
So too many, I have too many comic books. I know what that's like. What are some of your favorite too many comic books?
Oh, my favorites. Generally changes through the day, but I mentioned Herbie, I mentioned Amazing Man, Thunder Agents, Superman, you know.
Awesome.
Hardcore Kryptonian fetish here.
It just says hope.
Yeah, no exactly. <big deal. laughs> Which means the Kryptonians can't spell. It's an S. What are they thinking? But I love comics as a whole. I can remember my parents dropping me off at like a little mom and pop store and like, we'll go shop, you look at the funny books. And the first book I can remember was a Superman. Of course, at the time, we had the George Reeves TV show, and I dug that like crazy. And then after when I was fairly young and I decided I might like to do this for some sort of living, I realized that somebody had to write those words in those little balloons. And I thought, well, why can't I do that? And so I started working. Like I said, I did small press. I did mini comics back in the 80s and 90s, which were basically you take a sheet of typing paper, fold it twice, cut off one end, staple it down the middle, you've got a comic book. Take two sheets, you've got a 16-page comic book.
Almost like an ash can comic. Just
exactly.
Like a little,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you fold it once, you've got an ash can.
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
Yeah, so that's how, you know, I got some of my initial training. And then I would submit things to the companies, but I just never quite, you know, made that leap, or I had the wrong timing, you know, like... You know, I was almost guaranteed, like, I'm going to send them a script, and then about a month late or about a week later, I'd hear in the fan press that the company went under. So I thought it was me for a while. But and one of my coolest rejection slips was from Jim Shooter when he was in charge at Marvel. He said, and the letter said, you know, your work isn't quite what we're looking for. It's almost there. This is our boilerplate rejection letter for guys who almost make it. Now, we have a boilerplate letter for those who are nowhere close, but yours is close, so you're getting this boilerplate letter. And I thought,
Jim Shooter, sorry, but Jim Shooter did The Secret Wars. Correct, correct.
He also was one of the youngest people to enter the field of comics at 14, writing The Legion of Superheroes.
Wow.
And he went on to write The Avengers, Ghost Rider, a whole bunch of stuff for Marvel. before becoming the longest running editor, the third longest editor in chief behind Joe Quesada and Stan Lee.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Wow. Plus, and also the creator of Valiant Comics. So. Yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show you that, you know, there is no hindrance in this industry. If you work it, if you keep doing it, you can make the books that you want to make.
Exactly. And that's, and considering now, like, I go back to the technology of printing now.
Yeah.
Back in the day, there were places that would print comic books for you. There always have been. But you had to buy like 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever.
Bulk buy, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas now you have something called print on demand. And there are a number of companies that do high class printing, but they can, if you would just want one copy, they'll print it for you.
Yes.
You know, or if you want 1,000 copies, they'll print that for you. It's just a matter of shopping around, and the internet is a fantastic place in that you can get these little bits of information. Just look up print on demand comics, and you'll like wind up with like a huge sheet of names.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I'm fortunate, the Silver Phoenix people that I work for, the creative director owns his own comic press.
Oh.
It's in the basement of his house.
Wow.
So he doesn't have to go far.
No, not at all.
Right on. Well, I mean, if there's no other questions, I think we are about ready to wrap up.
Good for me.
Awesome panel. Thank you so much for
sitting
down.
Oh, thank you, my friend. Thank
you.
It's been a pleasure, as always.
If you guys want to go talk to this man right here, Brian, you can go back there at his booth, big old setup. You can go talk one-on-one, and he will not sign anything you buy from him for $20.
Exactly. I can make it a real bargain. Bring them, buy four or five books and don't have me sign them.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this panel. And I think I got my rundown sheet of what is coming up at 2 o'clock. It'll be the Fiberglass Freaks Making of the Batmobile panel right up here at 2 o'clock in about 20 minutes. So you definitely don't want to miss that. Once again, Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes.
And
thank you.
You know, thank Wes for sitting up here. And, and my co-host for Journey to Comics podcast, Nate, for that one question that he asked. And of course, thank this gentleman, too.
It was great. It was a great question, man. Great.
Good.
Be proud, young man.
We will be back up here in just about 20 minutes. Do not, well, stay here, but I mean, don't go too far.
And that was one hell of a panel you guys did. I actually went live on Facebook while you were doing the panel and got a little bit of the show. So you guys could go on my live feed and see that. It should still be up. I don't know how that works with Facebook. But now we're going to do a panel that Brandon and I got to do. It was the first one we got to do this year together. And it's actually the first panel we got to do together, which we didn't even realize it. It was just like a circumstantial thing, you know. But we got to interview and talk to Mark of Fiberglass Freaks. That's a hard one to say. They make the 66 Batmobile. That's the only vehicle they do, officially licensed by DC. He's going to do a presentation, and then pretty much after the presentation, we opened it up to a Q&A with the crowd. Brandon and I had a lot of questions because we're super geeks about Batman. This is like one of our dream cars, I think. So just to talk to him, and he has such knowledge about that car, was awesome.
Yeah, I was really in awe just sitting there because how we do it, as you said, he has like a little presentation. If you were live here at the con, you got to see it. We're actually going to have a video up at some point where he did like a little slideshow presentation. We were just sitting up there in the lounge on the stage. We have a whole like couch set up and like he was just up there and we just let him do his thing. And then afterwards we kind of joined in and had a really good conversation with him, and a really cool guy. He's living his dream. When you get to talk to him and you get to talk to him about what he's doing and what they're doing, he is like giddy as a little kid, dude. He's having so much fun doing this, and we're just going to get right to this and let him explain in his own words, his passion for building the Batmobile and something that he's always wanted to do. So we're going to go ahead and shoot over to him right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, now is time for another panel. We have Mark with Fiberglass Freaks here. He's going to be doing a presentation talking about the 1966 Batmobile.
Thank you very much. My name is Mark Rakeup, and I am the owner of Fiberglass Freaks, and what we do is we build 1966 Batmobile replicas for a living. And how does somebody get into that, you might be wondering, you might ask yourself. It's an odd profession, to be sure, right? Well, I'm glad you asked. In 1967, I fell in love with a certain television show. I fell in love with the music, the action, the color, everything about it, but especially with the Batmobile. And I said, someday I'm going to own that car. Someday I'm going to drive the Batmobile. So that fantastic double-bubbled vehicle with the flamethrower out the back, it made a permanent impression on me. And to see it peeling out of the Batcave and making that hairpin turn and going out over the danger sign, it was just absolutely awesome. I was 11 years old when my father took me to Chicago to see my first full-scale Batmobile. It was the number 4 Dragster, the one of the 4 that George Barris built. And this car cemented the dream that not only was I going to own a Batmobile, I was going to build my very own car. So 6 years later, I made it happen. With 5 crazy 17-year-olds with no automotive background at all, no automotive tools, we didn't even have an air compressor. We willed this car into being. We did everything wrong that you can possibly imagine. We made every mistake in the book as we built this car, using plywood and wood paneling and duct tape, and then we would fiberglass over it and find out that the duct tape and the fiberglass were incompatible. Then we'd have to grind it all back out. But eventually we taught ourselves how to do all of this, and we were really good by that point at making molds and fiberglassing and bodyworking, and we created, about three summers later, created Bat One. It was never quite exactly right, but it was a lot of fun, and it did bring a lot of smiles. So over the years, as I was doing research, we finally were able to get away from just having 4 photographs in my memory and a little toy Batmobile from which to build the car. The world changed with the advent of the internet, and so did my Batmobile research. Suddenly, hundreds of photos were available at my fingertips, and then I was able to do a ton more research. The TV series finally came back out on VHS. My father recorded it on VHS, I should say, and I would pause every single scene with the Batmobile, one frame at a time, to do my research. At 30 frames a second, it took forever to go through all of that. But even the mystery of the origin of the Batmobile became known. And the original car was a 1955 Lincoln Futura concept car. There was only one ever built, and it literally is the Batmobile. George Barris only had 5 weeks to find a car and turn it into the Batmobile. There was no time to make molds or anything else, so they literally converted it into the Batmobile in metal in less than 5 weeks. And that is how that worked. The double bubble windshields, the long fins, the trunk, chevrons, all of that was perfect to make the Batmobile. It didn't take long to add the Bat gadgets to that and make it the car. The notion to make an accurate Batmobile kept nagging at me because my first car, the Bat One, wasn't all that accurate. It was close, but not exactly right. Well, September 1st, 2003, I got to see the number 1 Batmobile in person for the very first time. And it was absolutely amazing to see this car because it was different from the number 4. The number 4, the 2, 3, and 4 cars that George Barris made are a little different. The interiors are completely different. The exterior is even different. So with that, I was able to take high-res photographs of the car and start doing a ton more research. The mysterious Futura in the Woods showed up on eBay, and this was crazy. You know how they say you can buy anything on eBay? They're not kidding. There was a person that was such a fan of the original Futura that he made a replica sculpture of it and popped molds of it. He put that sculpture up on eBay, and I was able to buy that for $2,125. Now, the 4 photos that were on eBay were very low res. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see the actual sculpture in person. Marty Martino was the sculptor of that, but looking at those 4 photos was not quite exactly the full story. So I got there and my jaw dropped, but not for the right reasons. It required a ton of work to be able to get this Futura in the Woods back up to snuff. I had to fill in all the missing pieces by carving in styrofoam and urethane foam into shape and fiberglassing over those. And finally, let's take a look at some of these before and after pictures. Number 17 there, you get to see some of the changes that are happening here. So with the wings and with those areas. 3 months later, we finally had a buck that was good enough from which to pull a mold. So then, using a Futura, fiberglass Futura body, replica body, I made the same changes that George Barris made to the original metal Futura, except I did them all in fiberglass. So what cars do we use? That's a good question. We used to use 1970s Lincoln Town cars. 1972 through 1979 have just about the right wheelbase, and with the Lincoln Heritage, it was really a nice marriage in that way as well. But now we're using custom-built chassis. But for the time being, for these photos, we take everything apart, we sandblast and powder coat the frames, we reassemble everything with brand new steering and brand new brakes, brand new suspension, and we install all of these items, and a brand new wiring harness is put throughout the car. We modify the floor pan considerably as well to widen the transmission tunnel and make room for the bat phone. We modify the bottom of it as well. And we offer our customers a choice of whether to go with a GM engine or with a Ford engine. We can take care of them either way. Our craziest car was a 702 horsepower Ford 460 bored out to a 514 stroker. When we started that engine, it shook the building. It was absolutely crazy. Right now we're building our first LS3 engine with 525 horsepower, so I'm really excited about that. Using our 22-piece mold, we make each quarter panel, and then we bolt the mold together, and then we're able to do the seams. While the body is upside down, we'll glass in the steel pieces that we'll later be able to weld to and make all of that happen. The bottom half of the car then is body worked from the flare to the bottom while the car body is still upside down in the mold. And here's the fiberglass body in slide number 33, ready to mount to the chassis. We suspend the body using electric winches on two A-frames, then we lower that down, and then we weld in stilts inside out of one-inch square tubing. There's quite a bit of one-inch square tubing to strengthen up the fiberglass bodies. Then after the body is mounted, that's when we cut off all of the flashing. We get into mounting the hood, the trunk, and the doors, and start adding some of the bat gadgets, and that's when the real excitement begins. Like the triple rocket tubes, the rocket exhaust tube. And shortly after that, we're working with the firewall, putting that in place, making the engine apron walls, make the trunk walls out of steel. And as we begin fitting the bat gadgets, like the gear shift indicator lights and the turn indicator lights, those were straight out of the Futura. They didn't modify any of that. That was all straight from the original car. Now, we also use a 1958 Edsel speedometer in the dash top. And a 1958 speedometer is what George Barris used in place of the compass that was on the original Futura on his number 2, 3, and 4 cars, and I thought it was a perfect answer for that. The steel rocket exhaust tube is mounted, the A-pillars are made, and the doors are hung. And then we make the dashboard and the steering wheel and get all those parts welded into place. After several rounds of sanding with various grits of sandpaper, we'll probably go over every square inch of that car about 25 times. Now this car is absolutely massive. It's 18 feet 10 inches long and it's 84 inches wide. That's about 3 times the square footage of a Corvette, just to give you a comparison. So after several rounds of sanding, getting into the finer grits, we wet sand the car and then finally we're able to paint it. We paint the striping first, mask off the stripes, and then paint the black next. Then after that, we unmask, fix any of the problems back and forth on the stripe, with whether it's in the black or whether it's in the red, and then we move into clear coat. We clear the car with 4 coats of clear, wet sand that with 600, then apply another 4 coats of clear, and then start wet sanding with 1,000 grit, 1,500 grit, 2,000, and all the way to 3,000 grit sandpaper before we bring out the electric buffer. This makes all the difference in the world of removing all the surface imperfections. Want to get rid of all the ripples and, of course, any dirt nibs and things like that that are in it. Those are all nibbed out. And then it's just a blast as we get into final assembly. Now, you may have heard a rumor that a Batmobile might have been here today. We're just about 3 weeks shy of having a completed car for you, so my apologies on that, but oh my goodness, is it exciting when a car comes into this stage of completion. We're putting things on for the final time. It's not just being test fit, it's final fitment, and that is awesome. When driving the Batmobile, and I've as I said, I built my first car way back in 1983. I've been driving a Batmobile now for many, many years, and I can tell you, it is awesome. There is no better car to drive on the road, whether it's on your city street, whether it is on a highway. I drove a car all the way to Chicago for Chicago Comic Con from Logansport, Indiana, where we're based out of, and that was insane on the Dan Ryan. As six lanes of traffic and people are leaning out of their van doors to take photos. It's like, no, get back in the van. Please be safe. But it is awesome. When you go through your favorite drive-through at your restaurant, everybody's plastered to the glass and they can't believe what they're seeing. Everybody loves the Batmobile. Even people that have never seen the TV show love this car. And that is one thing that I find absolutely amazing. We were parked right next to a Tumbler Batmobile, and kids would walk past the Tumbler and go, that's nice, and then they would point at our car and say, but that's the real Batmobile. I'm like, the Tumbler, that's your car, that's your era, and nope, they still love the 66. The Bat gadgets back in 1966 were pretty much all science fiction back in those days. Nothing really worked. Everything was done by trick photography using optical effects or using some kind of trick to sleight of hand. The technology has caught up to the imagination of those writers and directors, and now we can do all that stuff for real. It's like the trunk lid was supposed to open automatically. Well, they had to use a couple of studs that they welded onto the back of the hinges and wires through the floor pan. They had stagehands pull on it, and they added the sound effect later. But we have linear actuators now, and we can do that with a flip of a switch, just like it was supposed to be. So we are fulfilling the mind's eye view of what the Batmobile was. And that includes the trunk actuators, the hood actuators. It includes the beacon light, of course, on top of the car and the warning lights. We even have a propane tank in the trunk and hidden switches under the dashboard to fire off the flamethrower. And the giggle factor is on high. How about the bat phone? It was just a prop that they plugged in and out of an outlet to make it blink because it wasn't a static set amount of blinks. We are able to make that work. We make it blink, beep, and with Bluetooth technology, we're able to connect to any cell phone. And it is so much fun. Accuracy is through the ceiling on our cars. And even the chrome accents inside of the car are perfect mirror images of what the original car had. When I was out interviewing George Barris for one of the DVDs that we produced, I traced the door sill tread plate right off the number one car. And he let me measure the inside of the car. Remember, I did all of my stuff by watching the VHS copies of the series, frame by frame. I was within a quarter of an inch on just about every single measurement of the car. I can tell you which episode to go to see the number of holes in the beacon cage around the oval holes. I can tell you which episode to go to for the number of chevrons under the rear package tray. These are the things that I spent a lot of time researching. But on the passenger dash top, we have the detectascope, or what I like to call the Robin the Boy hostage finder. It blinks, it beeps, and it has some sound effects to it as well. So we make ours look a little bit nicer than what they did. They had added optical effects with just a white arrow. We've got messages that play inside of it with an LED message fan. The five-door dashboard was really unique on the Batmobile and also straight out of the Futura. Each of these five doors is made up of 110 individually cut, milled, sanded, buffed, and polished pieces. It takes 3 weeks just to make the dashboard of our car. Just to give you an idea about the amount of time required, it is absolutely amazing what goes into this. Literally nothing in this car is off the shelf except for the drivetrain. Everything else, we have to, even if we have a part water jet cut or laser cut, we still have to sand it and buff it and polish it, or we have to weld it together, prime it and paint it, and clear coat it. So nothing, you know, talk about a steering wheel from a Batmobile. Go into your local Napa and ask for one of those. Yeah, what kind of looks are you going to get? Working turn signal switches are located in the turn signal pods. We think that it's really cool that we can operate our stereo from the steering wheel now, and you know, our turn signal switches, things like that. This is way back in 1955. They already had this technology, and they had the vision to be able to put that together. Inside of the center of the steering wheel is a binnacle, and inside of that was, on the original car, a functional speedometer, tachometer, an odometer, and the warning lights. Center console bezels are made in aluminum, sanded, buffed, and polished. Even the Futura seats were difficult. There was nothing that was easy about this car. So we take fiberglass seat buckets and we send it off to a chromer who is able to use a copper impregnated primer, and then he's able to nickel it and chrome it for real. And when it comes back to us, it weighs about three times as much as it did when we sent it out to them. Under the arch, we find the five-light sequence flasher, which was part of the anti-theft system. Our windshields, they're made by an airplane canopy manufacturer in Ohio. And the gold bat beam antenna grid, that weird little fly swatter looking thing between the front windshields, that raises and lowers on a power antenna. And it's kind of like a firework. Everybody goes ooh and ah, and like, don't you remember power antennas? But maybe they don't. I don't know. It's been a while since they've been normal on cars, I guess. So, and yes, the flamethrower does work out the back of the car. Quality, features, performance, and accuracy are all very, very, very important to me. And much to the chagrin of my fiberglass freaks workers, there's no such thing as good enough. There is never such a thing as good enough. The minute we sit on our laurels, that's when we'll get in trouble. So we're always innovating. We're always trying to strengthen the car to make it better, faster, stronger, and all at the same time, or add more features. And these are some of the reasons that DC Comics chose our little itty-bitty company in Logansport, Indiana, to be the officially licensed builder in the world. And who would have ever thought that would have happened? Yes, I do a lot of this. A lot of this. So at this point, you might be wondering how many cars we've built in the 14 years that we've been in business. We're just completing our 24th car. We've got five more that are on order right now. So our next year and a half is pretty much mapped out. People ask all the time, well, do you build any other vehicles? We don't have time. We are behind from the minute a contract is signed. We are behind on every car that we're building. Who buys these cars? Well, it's obviously somebody that doesn't like attention, right? Oh, wait, no, it's kind of the opposite of that, isn't it? You don't want to buy one of these cars if you don't like attention, because you're going to get it everywhere you go. Gas stations, restaurants, wherever you drive the car, be prepared for people stopping you to ask, can I have my picture taken? Can I take a picture of the car? And of course, the answer is yes. That it, you know, that's why you bought the car, is for people to be able to enjoy it. And fairly well-to-do people, most of them are 45 to 65 years old. And what do they do with them? Well, one guy drives his kid to school every single day in Florida. The next guy uses it entirely for charity out in Arizona. He even built a warehouse as kind of a facsimile of the Batcave. And he brings in kids that are dying from leukemia or burn victims or cancer victims. These, and brings them in, shows off everything, and then hands the keys to mom or dad and says, take the car for a drive. And it's amazing to see. We have a car in England, we have a car in Italy, two in Canada, and shortly we'll have two in Australia. We have one there now. So they go all over the world. What's the price tag of a Batmobile? They can't be cheap with all this work going into it, right? Well, you're right. They start at $125,000 and go up to $250,000, depending on the drivetrain that's chosen and what bat gadgets they want and how accurate they want it. The $125,000 model has a very basic interior, whereas our $250,000 model is identical. It's exactly what the interior was of the car. Have any celebrities seen our cars? Who is this gentleman behind me here? Oh, we've been in a few magazines and things like that. One guy in England said, hey, you were in six magazines over in England. Do you want copies of them? Yeah. Sure, didn't even know it. So who is this gentleman in the car? Let's see. I think that's Adam West. the original Batman from the TV show, also known as Mayor West on Family Guy. Adam West is a terrific guy, and he was really amazed at the engine. The car he got to see when we were out in Pittsburgh was the one with the 702 horsepower engine.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, "How many horsepower was that again?" I said, "702, Adam." "That's great. The car I had was a piece of junk." But, you know, it's nice and all of that, but nothing beat the time that I got to pick up a Purple Heart vet who came in like in the middle of the night, and there was nobody at the airport to meet him, just his family. There was no big event going on, so we decided that we wanted to do something special for him. He's a huge Batman fan and a huge Batmobile fan. So he walks out of Chi-Chi's, and he sees a crowd, and he sees the Batmobile, and he says, "No way." He gets in the car, and he and I both have the time of our lives doing a police-escorted drive to the American Legion. So our lights are going. We're blowing through stoplights, and it was amazing. It was one of the most fun moments I'd ever had. So imagine the looks on the faces of the people at those intersections as two police cars go zipping past, and they're worried about that, and then they see the Batmobile. Like, what kind of emergency requires the Batmobile, too? But we got into the American Legion, and another 100 people were there, and they were holding flags, and it was incredible to see his outpouring of affection for all of these people having their outpouring of affection for him. It really is an absolutely amazing vehicle, and it can change lives. You wouldn't think of a car doing that, but you drive a Batmobile past somebody that was having a bad day, they're not having a bad day now. Now, what was the first car that I saw when I was 11 years old, the first Batmobile that George Barris built? It was the number 4 Dragster, right? What happens 38 years after I see that car? I receive a phone call. "Yes, this is Doug Jackson." I said, "The Doug Jackson, the owner of the number 4 Batmobile?" He said, "You know your stuff, sir." I said, "Well, thank you very much. What can I do for you?" He had driven over rough railroad tracks, and the rear windshield had snapped off the car and had flown in the air and had landed points down and shattered. I don't have any photos of that in this slideshow. But if you go on Facebook, you can see pictures of that at Fiberglass Freaks on Facebook. You'll have to go back quite a few pages. So he invited me out to Las Vegas, and I managed. It was pretty rough, but I stayed at his $4 million mansion there. And it was okay and all, but we just had an absolute ball. And he was outlining his plans of what he wanted to do with the car. And I said, "Doug, I would love to take that on for you." And we did. So 38 years after seeing the car that cemented the dream I was going to build my very first one, I got to restore the number 4 Barris-built dragster. It all comes full circle. And again, what am I doing? Pinching myself daily. So I've done a lot of yammering here, so let's open it up for you guys and to you folks for questions here. So how do you want to proceed from here?
First of all, Mark, I got to know, with a price tag like that, does it come with shark repellent?
It does not, but I know a guy.
You do know a guy. Okay, that's good. It seems that you guys could alternately, instead of being called Fiberglass Freaks, be known as Joymakers.
Joymakers.
Because everything you said was so much love and passion for this car, and it's, in my opinion, the most iconic of the Batmobiles. 1989 Batmobile would be a close second,
right?
But
that's our generation,
and that
though
would be our generation's Batmobile. But the first Batman I fell in love with was 66 Batman.
Absolutely, I completely agree. And the 89 is a beautiful car too, and it has the bat motif going and things like that. So there's a lot of grace and beauty to that vehicle as well. But yeah, the 66 is just close to the heart.
Now, I noticed on the hubcaps, you've got the bat symbol. Is that, you guys custom cut those and in your shop, or do you order those out?
We have them water jet cut, but then we have them powder coated. We weld a stud onto the back of it, have them powder coated, then we add a sticker to them, then clear coat over them, and then bolt those onto the wheels.
Wow.
So even something as simple as a wheel bat still takes about 3 days to make.
Yeah, they look incredible. Obviously, they are like exact replicas. You guys keep evolving them. You said that you guys can pretty much do anything. Is there going to be a time where you're like, okay, well, I guess we could put like an iPad in there or, you know, GPS unit? Because I'm sure you've had crazy requests.
We have had crazy requests, including an iPad, which we mounted to the bottom of the arch.
Oh, that's really.
An iPhone holder onto the center console. GPS and satellite radio is standard on our top of the line car. So absolutely. But the craziest requests are things like, I want bat-shaped confetti cannons in the triple rocket tubes. Okay, I'll see if we can find one that'll fit. And sure enough, I did. So you fire one out of one of the triple rocket tubes, bat-shaped confetti comes flying out. Fire two, fire three. And it is so much fun. It's another one of those giggle factor on high type things.
Brando, did you have any off the top of
your head? Mentioned that your company was so, you know, so honored to be now the official DC licensed maker of these vehicles. How did that come about? How did that start? Because, like, and then how long ago was that? Because that kind of blew my mind, and I had taken just a few seconds to, like, kind of catch up to you. Because that is insane, because you started this as just a passion project.
Right.
And now it has evolved into you being directly related to DC.
It's wonderfully crazy, Brandon. Who would have ever thought? Back in 2007, there was 2006, 2007, there was a major change in Warner Brothers and DC Comics regarding the series. Before that, they didn't want to have anything to do with the TV series. They were trying to bury it and keep it. They wanted to keep it from even coming out on DVD and Blu-ray at that time. But everything changed in 2007 when they licensed Hot Wheels to come out with the Batmobile in several different scales. And they sent a spy to my shop pretending to be a customer. And he must have liked what he saw, because a year later, we finally got a phone call from our attorney who said, yeah, you'll never believe this. DC Comics is asking if we would consider licensing. So we said, yeah, sure. Nothing happens. An entire year passes. They call again. Do you think Mark would consider licensing? We're like, yes, still. And another year passes. Now we're into 2010. And they come back again and ask the exact same question. Would Mark consider licensing? And we said, well, yes. 2 weeks later, we had a contract. And that changed everything. When we got that initial contract, I waited 3 days. Then I started sending out press releases. I sent 250 press releases over the weekend. And then on Monday morning at 8 a.m., I was expecting the telephone to ring off the hook. Nothing. Crickets. I thought, oh, did I miss? Was this not as big a deal? Was it the wrong car? That maybe everybody's into the newer cars? And then it went viral in Australia at 10 p.m. Monday night, and the phone call started then, and they've never stopped.
You know, it's interesting that you said that at one point DC wanted to bury the 66 era and keep it down. And just this past fall, we had the first new addition to that era with the animated DVD release. I can't remember exactly what it was called.
Return of the Caped Crusaders, I think?
It was something like that. I remember seeing the commercial, and of course I had Adam West and Burt Ward, and I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is awesome, because why can't these eras coexist?
Right.
You know,
they need to coexist. And I like all forms of Batman, whether it be comic books or whether it be television show, the animated series, one of my favorite versions.
Yes.
And then the movies as well. I love all versions, and they all have a place, and they can all coexist. If they can have 100 different Batmobiles sitting on a table right over here at Blue Moon Comics, why in the world can't we have different versions of Batman on the screens as well as, you know, on the shelves?
Okay, so I'd like to future trip. I got to ask you this question. Future tripping alone, you've built these cars. You're winding down in times of things you want to do. Is there any other vehicle within the 66 era, like the Batcopter or the Batboat, that you've ever considered, like, you know what, someday I'm going to have a Batboat. Nobody has a Batboat.
I built 70% of the buck for a Batboat before I got the licensing. But once I got the licensing, it said that I wouldn't do any other vehicles without their permission. I had to shelve the Batboat, and that was so hard to do, because it was so close to being ready to mold and be able to turn into a real functional boat. And unfortunately, I've asked three times of DC to say, hey, can I make the Bat Cycle, or hey, can I make the Bat Boat? And they've said no, that they have not licensed any other vehicle. Only the 1966 Batmobile has been licensed, and we're the only ones that have been licensed. So it's kind of a double honor when you think about it in that way. And it's an honor, it's a responsibility, and I take it very, 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 very strongly.
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, evident in the pictures of your work.
Thank you.
My other question is, have you ever had celebrities come up to you like, okay, I'm buying one of these and maybe put an order in? Have you dealt with anybody on a bigger scale like that?
How many of you have heard of Jeff Dunham, the ventriloquist that does Ahmed the Dead Terrorist?
Oh, yeah.
He bought one of our Batmobiles that we didn't build the original body, but we did go ahead and assemble and put the car together and all of the interior and exterior parts of it. He bought a replica of the 1955 Lincoln Futura, the world's only drivable completed car, built back in 1991. It was used in Viper, the TV show Viper. Then it sold to the guy that invented bubble wrap in Chicago, went to a 16-year-old in Ohio. Finally, it sold to a guy in Tennessee that did not consult his spouse before purchasing it. Suddenly, he had to get rid of the vehicle. Not a good idea. Always consult your spouse, no matter if it's the wife or the husband, make sure to consult your spouse. And then it sold to Jeff Dunham, and now we are restoring that car and also making it more accurate.
So is that the one you guys are about to release in 3 weeks?
No, that one's another Batmobile, but the Futura should be done in probably about 3 months, 4 months.
Wow.
So what is the typical turnaround time for a Batmobile?
Way too long. Oh. It's about 16 to 18 months from the order date to delivery date. And for a wealthy person, that's a long time. They're used to being able to walk into a place, snap their fingers, and buy something mm-hmm. and take it home with them. So it really requires a ton of patience on their part to wait that long.
So he said he does 18-month payment plans for ours, is what he just is what he actually just said.
Yes, right. We break it up into 5 payments, so that way it spreads the load out over that 18 months. And if it needs to be longer, that's fine. We can make it 2 years or so.
Good to
know. Help people out.
Maybe we'll return next year in one of the. Well, I guess it wouldn't be enough time. 2 years from now, we'll come back to LafayCon with one of Mark's custom built Batmobiles. Now, you've talked about how you're a big fan of Batman. You've talked about how you're a proponent of this vehicle. If, across the other Batmans, you were to ever dabble in any other kind of Batmobile, and I'm including the animated series and any of the comics, is there one model off the top of your head you're like, someday, if I have time, I would love to do that car?
The only other one is the 1989 Michael Keaton Batmobile. Because of the graceful lines and because of the art that's involved in that, that one does have a special place for me, too. But that's a huge car also.
Yeah.
The Batmobile, our Batmobile fins are 15 inches tall. The fins on that car are almost 3.5-4 feet tall. It is massive, and it would be very, very difficult to make the fiberglass bodies of that one.
Are there any other questions from those here and the audience here? We would love any questions, and of course, Mark will answer them for you. We're wrapping up this panel here. It has been it's been a real mind blow.
Yeah, for
like
real.
To sit here, like I think I have like the best seat in the house. Like to sit here and I'm like right here, and it took me just a second. I'm still sitting in front of people, you know, and I have to still host this show. I was having way too much fun. But if there's any questions at all, please feel free to definitely speak up. And of course, you'll be circling around. Do you have a booth here? Or?
No, not this year.
But you'll be circling around, probably, and people can come up to you.
Sure, absolutely.
And then you're also on, the website is fiberglassfreaks.com.
Fiberglassfreaks.com. If you like these T-shirts, they're available in our store there. So keep that in mind. And we are opening up a small gift shop at our store. At the shop there, so if you want to come to or give a tour, or take a tour rather, I can set that up for you as well. Just call my office manager, Gina, at the phone number 574-722-3237, and she'll fix you right up.
I'm impressed that you have that number memorized in the era with cell phones where I don't remember numbers anymore. That was impressive.
But any other topics, anything I didn't cover that you've wondered about? Yes.
So were there concerns prior to you getting the license about trademark infringement from DC?
There always was in the back of my mind a possibility of that. Prior to the licensing, again, it was 2008 was when I knew that we were in good shape. We started in 2003, but from that point on, I knew that they weren't concerned from that perspective. But because DC and Warner Brothers had ignored this property for so long, I wasn't really concerned about it from that perspective. I considered it more gray market until they started licensing it. And then from that point on, it became very clear that it was black and white to them. And at that point, I was more than thrilled to be licensed by them and happy to do so.
I actually do have one. Oh, do we have another one out here? Yep, go ahead. Sorry.
I do still have Bat One. It's in my father's garage where we built it. And a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in that car. It's starting to show its age after all this time, unfortunately. I would love to bring it to an event like this, but it's not quite up to doing many long road trips anymore. But, I met my lovely wife, who's back in working the laptop with the slideshow, because of Bat One. So guys and gals, keep this in mind. If you have a Batmobile, it really does make a difference. Here was my pickup line. A mutual friend dropped her by to check out the car and see what his crazy buddy was doing. My pickup line was, I could use some help working on the car. And she said, yes. And we were just friends, and it was going painfully slow for me. So we're sitting in the unfinished Batmobile at the root beer stand. And I said, Jill, I think I'm falling in like with you. And that was the turning point. And April 4th, we'll be celebrating 30 years of marriage.
Wow, that's impressive. Awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we're very blessed, and it's an absolute joy to be working with my wife in all kinds of crazy endeavors.
Okay, any other questions from the audience before we wrap this one? Anything? I actually do have one last question.
Sure.
I want to throw you. So when you are first into a 66 Batman, it was not a comic. It was just TV show.
Right.
In 2015 or 14, 15 I think it was, they started the Batman 66 comic series. Have you perused those any and been like, that's inaccurate. I didn't draw that right, you know?
Unfortunately, yes. Everything in artwork or models or anything. That all started back when I was 11, by the way, looking at the car in Chicago. I could tell by looking at the photos of the real number one car and having watched the show, and then I'm looking at this replica car, even though it was built by George Barris, even though it was molded right off the number one, I'm sitting there looking, the beacon cage isn't right. The dashboard should be silver, and the rear antenna is wrong. What's going on here? So it started way early.
But it's that attention to detail that makes like what you do like so like amazing.
Cut above the rest,
yeah,
I think.
Thank you.
And that's why they definitely went to you.
Thank you.
Got to be. I mean, someone with your eye, with something that you've been so passionate about, it definitely bleeds into your work.
Definitely.
Well said, Brandon. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for coming on the panel
sure.
today. I don't know. What's our time, Brando?
We're good on time. So if anybody else has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Yeah, sure. Just waiting, no?
Any other thoughts? Anything about the TV show itself? Sure, fire away. They sure have. Adam West and Burt Ward both have. We've actually worked with both of them at different events, different comic book shows. That's been a lot of fun. Burt recognizes me on site now, and so does his agent, Andrew. Adam doesn't, but his agent, who unfortunately just passed away, Fred Westbrook just passed away, but he would be the one saying, Adam, this is Mark. He's on the DVD with you. Oh, yes, it's great to see you again, Mark. And it's a lot of fun. But Julie Newmar saw a photo of one, and so did Yvonne Craig, and they signed posters and things like that. It's too bad that Yvonne has left us as well to the great Bat Cave in the sky. But it's a blast working with these folks. It's just they're all good people and just a ton of fun. If you get a chance to go see them, Adam is not getting any younger. At 87, he's about ready to retire. So if you're looking to meet him, go do it now while you still can. He could pull the plug at any moment and say, I'm retired. But good people and a lot of fun, and they really appreciate the fans very, very much. And that's something that's really nice and really rare out there.
Well, I think that is going to conclude our time here today. And, of course, if anybody has any questions, they can see you cruising around and visit your website at fiberglassfreaks.com.
Fiberglassfreaks.com. We're on Facebook and also on YouTube, about 20 different YouTube videos. So if you want to see a little bit more of what we do and how we do it, you can check that out.
I know what I'm doing during break.
One of our videos is called Holy Double Vision, where you get to see two Batmobiles out on the highway together. And that's a blast. And Batmobile Delivery Day was another crazy one, too. So thank you so much for your attention. I hope you enjoyed the panel. And come check us out when you can. To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks again.
That was awesome.
That was, like, probably one of my favorite panels we did from LaFeeCon Brando. Mark is such a knowledgeable guy. His story is amazing because it starts, you know, at a young age. He's really passionate about something. And think about this. He gets the love of the Batmobile at 11. And by the time he's, I think he said 17, that's 6 years, they've built Mark One of the Bat One, if you will. And I mean, this guy, he's met pretty much the who's who from the Batman show. And I'm just going to say it, he's the authority of the Batmobile from 1966. And I really wish he could have got to build that bat boat, you know?
Yeah, man. To hear him tell it, I believe, did he finish the story with us off air about how he had some drama with the bat boat even after he quit, you know, messing with it. Yeah. And, you know, I really hope that he gets to pick that back up again in the future and hope that DC's pretty cool about that, because they got to realize what a talent they have on their hands here with this guy. You know, just as I said before, he's living his dream. He has a passion about that car. He spent decades researching this car, knowing he knows it from top to bottom, you know, just like you do, like your own, like the palm of your hand. And so for DC to allow him to build that boat and other projects, hopefully, I'm really hopeful for that. But Nate, it was so awesome to get to host some of these panels. These were just two. And hopefully we have some more coming up. We hosted more that day. We're gonna try and figure out how we're gonna meld these panels together. We felt like these two were really, really cool to just kind of put together. They're not necessarily related, but really cool little taste of experience of what it was like to be at LaFeeCon 2017. And if you weren't here, you're definitely gonna want to be here next year, because I know we certainly want to be, and to get to host more panels. But there's gonna be another episode of panels coming up here soon, Nate. But I think that's going to do it for us here this week on Journey to Comics. Is there anything that you want to say in the closing?
Just the plugs. Make sure to follow us on all our different social medias. JIC Podcast on Twitter, Journey to Comics Podcast on Facebook, Journey to Comics on Instagram. Journey to Comics Podcast at gmail.com is our email. You can get us on YouTube at Journey into Comics. Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Music, and iTunes all have Journey into Comics. And do not forget to come back next week. If this works out how I think it's working out, Brandon, next week's episode is a big two-parter, it seems.
That definitely seems to be what we're planning. We hope that it works out that way. We also have a couple other things coming down the pipe. An episode that we recorded last week that's not good, or last week for us, as you guys are hearing this, we're actually recording this live on the floor of Sunday of LaFeeCon. We're going to, you know, get this episode put up for probably in the coming weeks, but then... Like, so by the time you hear the episode that we've been talking about, it might be a few more weeks out, but a lot of cool stuff going on in the Journey into Comics world. Of course, we have some major movies coming up, some major show finales coming up, and I can't wait to talk about those with you. And of course, as Nate said, check us out on all of our social media, especially YouTube, because some of the videos that we have from our panels and our live show are going to go up on there. We're going to get edited up, and I'm going to get those up there so you guys can actually see what we're talking about and what you hear here. So with that being said, I'm Brando.
And I'm Nate.
And this has been Journey into Comics. See you next week.